Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. You were just listening to Stefan Maillars, who is a Belgian classical composer, and he was gracious enough to compose the Judy Joy Jones Show theme, which is quite lovely. And thank you, Stefan. We really enjoyed that. Today, our guest is Arun Gandhi. Arun Gandhi is the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, who was the spiritual leader of India. I'm going to read you a little bit about what his past was, and then, of course, I'm going to bring him up and let him correct everything I've said and tell you the most pertinent things. Arun Gandhi's childhood days under South Africa's apartheid for someone of Indian heritage was considerably difficult, humiliating, and often violently abusive. Like many Indians, he was demeaned by Europeans for not being white and ostracized by Africans for not being black, and subject to radically motivated violence from extremists in both groups. This led to a series of resentful and angry teenage years. While living with his grandfather, Mahatma Gandhi, from 1946 until his assassination in 1948, Arun experienced the most tumultuous period in India's struggle to free itself from the British rule. And I would just like to let Arun speak for himself for the remaining part of this show. Let me bring him up. Hello, Arun.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on your show, Judy.
Thank you so much for being here. We're just really honored to have you. I always like to have the guests speak for themselves. I feel that you can do much more than what I could read.
I think you did a very good job of introducing me.
Thank you. I would love to have you tell people what you're doing today, Arun, where you're living and what you're up to, and for people that are just now kind of tuning in, how they can find out about you.
Well, I am living in Rochester, New York, in the United States, and I had started in 1990 the M.K. Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence, which was at the Christian Brothers University in Memphis, Tennessee. But then after my wife's illness, I had to move to Rochester, and the University of Rochester was very interested in the program, so we moved the institute to Rochester. But early last year, in a Washington Post blog, I wrote something about the violence as it pertains to the Middle East and the Israeli and the Jewish conflict, and the Jewish people didn't quite like that.
No.
And so I was forced to resign from the university and the institute. And so now I'm on my own. I go out and lecture at various universities
uh-huh.
and talk about nonviolence and peace. And I also started an M.K. Gandhi Institute for Worldwide Education. And the purpose of this institute is to build schools for the very poor children and give them education and the means to get out of poverty. And so the first school is going to come up very soon in a village in India.
Oh.
And and I would like your listeners to check the website, which is www.gandhiforchildren.org.
Okay, absolutely. And if it's all right with you, I'll bring up our co-host. Her name is Christina Blodgett, and she actually works for the radio station. So she's public relations. If that's all right with you, I'll just bring her on.
Yes, perfectly all right. Yes.
All right. Christina, hello.
Hello, Christina.
Hi, John. Hello, everyone. How are you guys doing?
Great.
I'm doing well, thank you.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and I'm especially enjoying it because I'm spending a few days holiday with my grandson in Los Angeles.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's great. You get some warm weather. I'm out east. I'm in Connecticut, and it's been a little cold.
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's nice to have some sunshine, I bet. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Aren, because of all the controversy, did you feel that you were kind of like having to start all over, or were you able to just kind of go forward and say that's part of life?
No, I think I basically just went forward and took this as a part of life. And
right.
I was very saddened that instead of generating a healthy dialogue, it generated a lot of anger. And I don't think anger is going to help us resolve this issue.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to do now is to find adequate ways in which we can find solutions to these problems. And instead, we have been, using violence, and that's not helping anybody.
No, absolutely not. And it seems like everyone's so quick to judge instead of take time to find out what the person actually was trying to say and what they meant.
Exactly.
And, I was really surprised because when I had written about you being on our show, I didn't know about this other thing, and so I thought, oh, my gosh, having to go through such an ordeal, because I know your heart is absolutely pure in wanting to spread nonviolence.
Yeah, I've been incapable of hating anybody. I mean, that's the last kind of accusation anybody can make about me, that I'm an anti-Semitic or anti-anybody. I don't hate anybody. I've never been taught to hate anybody.
No.
But what pains me is in this process of trying to find a peaceful solution, instead of having a dialogue, we have resorted to this kind of action. And that kind of silencing me is not going to help anybody.
No, it's not. And I was really not knowing whether to bring it up, but, of course, it's all over the news, it's all over the Internet, and I thought, my goodness, he needs to talk about it because this is something that is changing your whole life. It has to be, and I hope that it gets resolved and everyone kind of looks at you have worked your whole life to spread your grandfather's message of nonviolence.
Right.
And for this to come up at such a late date, it's really one of those things that...
Yeah, it is. It's very sad things. And, but
I can
what
understand.
Can you do?
Yeah, what can you do? You kind of have to take it in, deal with it, and work with
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Right.
And how you...
Well, I looked at it as, you know, this is not my problem. I expressed my views,
mm-hmm.
And those who have understood the views have understood
right.
what I was trying to, reach. But this is basically a Jewish and Israeli problem. They are the ones who are embroiled in this violence. And unless they are willing to look for a solution that will end the violence, it's going to consume everybody eventually.
Well, you know, I really admire you for speaking your piece. A lot of people won't. You know, we're taught not to, or we're taught to be afraid to, and you speak out. Would you say your influence with your grandfather is the reason that you are doing this?
Yes, I would say that, he was always a lover of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And although I can't say that I am as staunch about it as he is, but I'm trying to work my way up there, and I try to stand by the truth too. And, you know, truth sometimes hurts, and this is one of those occasions which, in one sense, it has hurt me, but in another sense, I think I am right in what I have said in trying to find a nonviolent and peaceful solution. And so I don't really have anything to worry about.
That's the thing. You have a clear conscience and your heart is pure, so you can go ahead and be who you are and say what you feel. I would imagine living with your grandfather as you did at such a young age during the last 2 years of his life,
mm-hmm.
had to have a remarkable influence on you, Arun.
Oh, yes, it was. It was absolutely remarkable. And, you know, the nearly two years that I spent with him, I think transformed my life completely. I wouldn't be what I am today if I had not had that time with him. And if I had not had the parents that I had who were so devoted to the philosophy of nonviolence and practiced it at home and gave us the foundation of that philosophy.
Did, when you were with him, was most of the time spent in prayer and silence, or did you get to actually sit and talk with your grandfather and ask him?
No, he decided that he was going to spend an hour with me every day.
Oh,
and
okay.
He left whatever he was doing between 4 and 5,
mm-hmm.
and he would spend that hour with me, and he would just be a grandfather. He would tell me stories, we would spin cotton yarn together, and he would help me with my lessons and so on. And, you know, all his stories had a moral basis. And all of those stories had a connection to his philosophy of nonviolence. And so when I grew up, after learning all those stories and experiencing that,
mm-hmm.
when I began to grow up, and my parents also helped me in trying to figure out what he meant and how it is connected to his philosophy and
sure.
and so on. So. You know, it made a lot of sense to me as I began to grow up.
Wow. I mean, it must have been like, well, you had no idea that he was going to be such a leader in history, like a non-denominational saint, did you? I mean, when you
well,
were only 12 years
old. Yeah, I think I knew, but I didn't know he was going to be such a worldwide leader. I knew
oh,
that
okay.
he was very... adored in India. I could see that, wherever we went, there were hundreds and thousands of people lined up just to get a glimpse of him.
Oh.
Every morning when I got up, I would find a few hundred people standing silently outside just to wait and see him and then go about their daily work. So, you know, that kind of adoration, you don't see very often. And,
no.
And when I saw that, I realized that he was a great person. What I didn't realize was that he was such a global person.
Oh.
That realization came much later.
Yeah, he really is a global. In fact, you know, I think that as we go on and we're trying to find the answers, that he had answers that were way above or way ahead, I should say, of his time.
Mm.
And, you know, Christina, I know that you've been looking at Arun's book. Did you have any question that you would like to ask him?
Well, I listened to a speech. One of the things I did to just do some research before the interview is I listened to a speech that you have. It was on iTunes, and it was from a speech, I believe, at Stanford. And there were so many stories that you shared in there. And what's so amazing and humbling to me is that just to know Gandhi as your grandfather, and just to hear you say grandfather, and to share those stories that were deeply personal, but there's lessons for us all in them, and there's those threads of meaning and understanding, and it was very touching to be able to glimpse him through your eyes and to see how he, as he's taught us all of us that seek peace and a better world and to live in a way that can create it, and to see how he did that in his day-to-day actions with you, it was very beautiful. And one story that I remember that you shared was a story about a pencil and how you dropped a pencil and how that, if I recall correctly, it led you, at his request, to create something called a tree of violence. I was just wondering, for listeners today that might not be familiar with that story, would you be able to share a little bit about that and how that the lessons you learned from that experience? I took notes when I listened to this, as I felt there were so many words of wisdom in what you learned and what you shared.
Yeah, indeed. You know, I was about 13 years old then when I was living with him, and I had private tuitions to further my education. And I was coming back home from one of these tuitions, and I just happened to look at the pencil in my hand. It was about 3 inches long, and I thought to myself, I deserve a better pencil. This is too small for anybody to use. And so without a second thought, I just threw that pencil away. I was so sure that Grandfather would give me a new pencil when I asked him for one. But that evening when I asked Grandfather for a new pencil, instead of giving me one, he subjected me to a lot of questions. He wanted to know why the pencil became small and where did I throw it away and why did I throw it away and on and on and on. And I couldn't understand why he was making such a fuss over a little pencil until he told me to go out and look for it. And I said, you must be joking. I said, you don't expect me to look for a little pencil in the dark? He said, oh, yes, I do. Here's a flashlight. Take this and go out and look for the pencil. And I must have spent about 2 hours searching for that pencil. And when I finally found it and brought it to him, he said, now I want you to sit here and learn two very important lessons. The first lesson is that even in the making of a simple thing like a pencil, we use a lot of the world's natural resources, and when we throw them away, we are throwing away the world's natural resources, and that is violence against nature. And the second lesson is that because in an affluent society we can afford to buy all these things in bulk, we overconsume the resources of the world, and because we overconsume them, we are depriving people elsewhere of these resources, and they have to live in poverty, and that is violence against humanity. Now, that was the first time I realized that all of these little things that we do every day, things that we throw away and overconsume and destroy without even thinking about it,
sure,
that all of these things add to violence in human life. And then to make me understand this properly, he suggested that I should make a genealogical tree of violence, just as we would do a family tree, on the same principles, with violence as the grandparent, and physical violence and passive violence as the two branches. And every day before I went to bed, I had to examine everything that happened during the day and put them in their appropriate places on that tree. Now, physical violence is something that we understand because it's the kind of violence that we are exposed to, and it's the kind of violence that hurts us.
Sure.
It's all the violence where we use physical force against one another, like wars and killings and beatings and murders and rapes and all of these acts where we use physical force is physical violence. But passive violence is something that we tend to ignore because it's the kind of violence where we don't use any physical force and yet we hurt people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all the discrimination, oppression, suppression, economic, political, social, cultural, religious, name-calling, teasing, prejudices, and, you know, overconsumption of resources and wasting of resources and thousands of things that we do consciously and unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is more insidious. You know, we perform many of these things without even realizing that we are being violent. And when I began to do this exercise, this kind of introspection actually, when I began to do this, within a few months, I was able to fill up a whole wall in my room with acts of passive violence.
Oh.
And that's when Grandfather explained to me the connection between the two. He said, we commit passive violence all the time, every day, consciously and unconsciously. And that generates anger in the victim, and the victim then resorts to physical violence to get justice. So it is passive violence that fuels the fire of physical violence. So logically, if we want to put out that fire of physical violence, we have to cut off the fuel supply. And since the fuel supply comes from each one of us, we have to become the change that we wish to see in the world.
Absolutely, yeah. That makes...
That's such a beautiful story. And exactly, to become the change that we wish to see and how,
right.
You know, we
yeah.
can't just expect change and peace to be created automatically. And as you
no,
saw
we...
with what happened with you recently, when you try to step into those wounds and where
yeah.
there's a lot of darkness, that stuff just, it is like a fire that comes up. And when your intentions are to help give understanding, it's not always what's received on the other end because
yeah.
there's a lot
exactly.
of fear and a lot of pain. But if we keep doing that and if we keep... you know, keep becoming that change in our own life and the little steps that we take on a daily basis, I mean, I believe that we will have a more peaceful world and
yeah,
that
well,
is the
I
direction
have,
that we're going.
Yeah, I have always wondered why is it that although we have been wanting peace for such a long time,
mm-hmm.
why is it so difficult to attain? And now I know why it is. Because
yeah.
we don't have peace within ourselves and we can't create it
yeah.
outside.
Yeah.
We are trying to create outside something that we don't even know how to create within ourselves.
I agree. I completely agree. And it's, you know, going within and looking at what of ourselves is reflected back to us in this world.
Exactly.
And and that responsibility that we each have to our own journeys, and then
exactly.
that idea of interconnection that you were talking about passive violence and how little things that might just totally not register in our minds or in our hearts as affecting other people, that is the culmination of the world we see today. And a lot
right.
of things that we think to be as not important or that we can just let go and not really care about, it's that little bits of not caring that have created a lot of what we see.
Well, I think it all comes out of the fact that we think we are independent individuals and we can
yeah.
do whatever
yeah.
we like and it's nobody's business.
Yeah.
That we can afford it and we can waste and we can use and we can destroy,
mm-hmm.
You know, because we can do it. And I think that's a very wrong concept because nobody is independent. You know, we are all interdependent and interrelated and interconnected. And we need to realize that. And it's only when we realize that we will be able to create the kind of peace and understanding that we want in the world today.
Absolutely. You know, I have a young man. His name is Kevin. He has his statement of support he wanted to share with you. Let me bring him. Kevin?
Yes. Good afternoon, evening, Judy.
How are you?
Yeah. Hello, Kevin.
Good afternoon, evening to you as well. I'm not sure where you are. I felt compelled to call you because I have been a very proud student of your grandfather, yourself, and mine. And the report that you put out, I truly believe you stood in your grandfather's truth as well as yours.
Thank you very much.
And I truly believe that the example of what happened is the example of our inability to stand in the truth when it's presented to us. So,
thank you.
If nobody else has said it, I'm proud of you, sir.
Thank you very much.
You are welcome.
Thank you. It means a lot to me.
Thank you.
It meant a lot to me to be able to tell you that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You know, it's like people have got to be able to say their own piece. And we hear things, we hear them on the news, and we go, oh, yeah, right. But many times we only hear a little bit, and we need to hear the truth.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm so glad you're on our show tonight, because you can let everyone know what it really was like for you to be saying what you said and for the news to be reacting like they did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, just yesterday I was in San Diego and somebody there told me, said, didn't you know that in the United States you can't speak against the Jews and Israel and get away with it? And I said, well, I do know that, but somebody has to speak the truth, and I thought that that was the truth, and I'm going to speak it. And I don't regret it at all. But, you know, this is the attitude that we kind of fear the consequences, and so we shut up and don't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong. I mean, that doesn't help anybody.
No, and your grandfather was totally, totally against that. I mean, he wanted us to speak up the truth, and no matter what the consequences were, to know that we had to go ahead and say it.
Yeah. I mean, if Dr. Martin Luther King hadn't gotten up and said what he felt about segregation and prejudices, we wouldn't have an African-American president in the White House today.
No, we wouldn't, Arun. We would not. If he hadn't spoken, and you're absolutely right. You know, we all are little pieces in the puzzle and the step to the next step. And I feel like you're trying to let us know that it is absolutely okay to speak the truth.
Yeah.
And no matter what the consequences, that we can bear them and we will go on. You know, I had hesitation to bring up about that part of your life in feeling that I wanted to be respectful to what you were doing today and what you wanted to bring up. But because you brought it up, I feel like, oh, okay, it's all right. But I wasn't sure. And I really didn't know, you know.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to express it.
Absolutely. You know, we're all trying to find out the best way to become a saint. And since you had a grandfather who was a he actually was a Hindu saint, maybe you can let us know how can we all, as human beings, with all of our problems, our very humanness, how can we become better?
Well, one of the things that he said and all of his life was that life is not about running around in circles. It is about climbing up a ladder. That every day we get up, we are going up one rung in the ladder and trying to reach the very top there. And if we have that outlook, then we will be better today than we were yesterday. And we make that effort every day to become better and better human beings as we go upwards. But instead, we seem to be quite content to run in circles, and we just go around and round in circles, passing the time of day from morning till evening or from birth to death, and really don't achieve very much except making a lot of money, and that's not really any achievement. You know, the real achievement is what kind of a moral person are you? The morals and ethics that we should be practicing, that we don't do because we are so caught in the rat race to make money that we don't care about anything else there. So that outlook in life, that outlook that he had, that every day he was going to make an attempt to be better than the day before, that is something that we all need to learn about and imbibe in our lives. The second thing, I think, is his humility. He never wanted to be a saint. He didn't want anybody to refer to him as a saint. He was a very ordinary person, and he was making an attempt to become a good person. And he said that that is something that all of us can do, that all of us can just make an attempt to be a better person, practice what we believe the truths to be, and live it accordingly, and you know, the greatness will come on its own. But if we have that target that we want to be the saint, and we're going to reach the top by any means possible, then we fail. Then we will never make it there, because that is a wrong attitude. To get to the top by any means possible is a very wrong attitude. We have to get to the top by the right means, and the right means is humility and truthfulness.
Absolutely. And, you know, your grandfather was probably one of the few people on this earth that could teach us that the path maybe to greatness is through humility, but
yeah.
I think, you know, most of us don't want to go through what he went through, obviously. I mean, but if you could give us a little bit about what would you say that when people, your grandchildren talk about you and tell about you to their grandchildren, what would you like them to tell people? What would you like people to know about you?
I would like people to know that I am sincere in what I am trying to do, and I'm putting in my best efforts to achieve that, that I may be making mistakes on the way, but I hope I'm learning from those mistakes and avoiding them in the future. That my journey has been a very sincere journey in life, and that it's a journey that all of us can take if we have the desire to do so and reach the top. You know, as I said earlier, we have to have that mindset that our journey in life is to climb the ladder of success, a moral and ethical success. And every day we take one rung upwards, and that way we will make our lives more meaningful than running around in circles, chasing our tail to get a couple of $1 million in the bank.
That's right. And, you know, I think, Christina, you had really had a lot of questions about Arun's book.
Well, I had a lot of stuff just basically from a lot of different parts of his journey. And there was one thing I found as a recording. I think, I believe it's called We Are Not Alone. And it's a recording that was on iTunes. And I believe that it was something you recorded with your late wife. But you said that your grandfather believed that physical death is the birth of spiritual life. And I'm just quoting what you said, and that since light is enlightenment, and it's also a life-giving source, and when we die, we merge into the great sun or the moon, because they are the celestial lights that give us light, and they take us back again. And I felt such a connection to what you said there, because I think if you think about us, there's a lot of running in circles that goes on on a daily basis on this planet. Mm. And one thing I think a lot of us run from is our fear of leaving this planet and going into that other world.
Right.
And it's not talked about. I mean, I think if you seek to talk about it, you'll find some answers in books and in meeting people on that path. But, you know, it's looking at that our journey here, it's one part of the journey on that continuum of life. And mm-hmm. what you said about your grandfather, believe, you know, I think about when people that I've loved have passed on and they've given me signs. I get signs occasionally from them. You know, something I'll see or hear will remind me of knowing them in this time and a reminder that they're still here in some sense. And I was just wondering if you've ever received signs from your grandfather from after he passed on. Have you experienced that all of feeling the connection to him since he passed? Or what do you still feel that his spirit all around you or anything that you'd like to share there?
Yes, I do think so. And, you know, I mean, it's not tangible. I can't say that at this mm-hmm. moment grandfather or my ancestors or my parents are sitting with me and guiding me. But I do see this in many things that I do. Very often when I am faced with a very serious problem and I can't find a solution, then suddenly it dawns on me. And I feel that it didn't come there by chance. It was nudged into place in my mind by my ancestors, my grandfather and my parents and all of them who are there in heaven are in some way or the other guiding my life and giving me the answers to questions that I seek, you know. And so, yes, I think that they are always there. And if we have that kind of an open mind to listen mm-hmm. to the inner voice, then, you know, we will hear it. But if we don't, you know, we drown ourselves today with so much noise that we can't hear our inner voice speaking to us. And that is the sad part of it. Even our music has become so loud and so, deafening that we can't hear ourselves breathing, never mind the inner voice. So, you know, it's our desire to listen to the inner voice and to listen to what our ancestors have been telling us needs some quiet time every day. And if we have that quiet time and that meditative attitude, then we will be able to hear the voices of our ancestors guiding us in our difficult times.
I relate very much to what you said, and it's, you know, it's a presence that is here, but it's there when you need it most. And I sometimes hear a little whisper or a little, you get a flash or something feels right.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like you settle into an answer and a decision and you feel that somebody is helping you get there. And I understand very much what you said. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that mostly people would like to know, what is it that you would say that Mahatma Gandhi, who was one of the who was the actual leader of India, spiritual leader, what would you say that he passed on to you, Arun, as far as your life ahead, and what you would pass on to us, knowing that you had a very special place in history, which few of us do. Can you explain somehow in everyday layman's term what we might do that would progress peace on earth? I know that all of us have our ideas and what might do it, but I feel that Mahatma Gandhi, he knew what would do it.
Yeah, I think he knew about it because he had the right perspective of the whole thing. We don't have the right perspective, and therefore we are stumbling in our attempts to find peace and harmony in life.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm referring to is that over the generations, for some reason or the other, we have always subscribed to the culture of violence. That, every aspect of our lives has become controlled by violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand to some extent because, you know, we have this hierarchical leadership. We have a government that has to control the people, and the easiest way for them to control the people is by putting fear in them, fear of punishment. We do that with our children. When we control our children with punishment, we are putting the fear in them, and they, you know, they have to be afraid of the parents. So fear is the way we seek to control each other. And that is the basis of the culture of violence. And because it has been with us for so many centuries, you know, it has seeped into every aspect of our lives. Our speech has become violent, our attitudes have become violent, our relationships have become violent. Everything about us is violent. And that has, you know, translated into seeking violent solutions and so on. And people today have come to believe that violence is human nature, that we can't do anything but be violent. And I don't think so. I think that if it was human nature, we wouldn't need military academies and martial arts institutes to teach us how to fight and kill. The fact that we need these institutions to teach us how to fight is an indication that this is a learned experience. So what we see today is that while we subscribe to the culture of violence, while we remain steeped into this culture of violence, we want to create peace. And that is impossible to do. We cannot create peace if we are going to live in a culture of violence, if we are going to be dominated by fear and you know, aggression and all of these things. So if we want peace, then we have to replace that culture of violence with a culture of nonviolence. And that means that we have to allow all the positive feelings and attitudes and behavior and all of these things within us that we keep suppressed, we have to let them flourish. We have to let them come out. You know, and what I mean is all the respect and understanding and love and compassion and all of these very positive feelings that we try to suppress within ourselves, because in a culture of violence, it's, you know, a very weak kind of thing to show our respect and to show our compassion. And so we suppress it. And we need to let it flourish. We need to let it come out, and we need to let it dominate our lives and our attitudes. Then we would be able to create peace.
Absolutely. And I think so many of us have grown up with violence and thinking that this is the way of our culture, but truly our culture is one of peace, and we just
it
don't...
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you and Mahatma Gandhi and all the great spiritual teachers tell us over and over, overcome hatred with love. And it sounds so easy, but it really is the only way.
Yeah, it is. You know, one of the, I think, most profound lessons that I was taught by grandfather, and it's a lesson that I would say that everyone needs to learn. And in fact, I have been advocating in many of my speeches that this is a subject that we need to introduce in the elementary school stage and have it compulsory for all students, right from the elementary school all the way up to the university. And that is understanding anger and being able to use that energy positively. You know, today we have been told that anger is shameful and that we should not talk about it. We should not, you know, do anything. We need to suppress it. We need to get it out of our system. And, you know, all of that is negative. Anger is not evil. Anger is not bad. Mm-hmm. It is a very powerful and a very useful emotion. What is bad and what is evil is the way we abuse anger. And grandfather used the analogy of electricity to explain this to me. And he said, Anger is just like electricity. It's just as powerful and just as useful, but only if we use it intelligently. But it can be just as deadly and destructive if we abuse it. So just as we channel electrical energy and bring it into our lives and use it for the good of humanity, we must learn to channel anger in the same way so that we can use that energy for the good of humanity rather than abuse the energy and cause death and destruction. So he suggested how to use that energy, you know, by writing an anger journal, and writing it with the intention of finding a solution to the problem, and you know, making an honest and sincere attempt to understand the anger and be able to channel that energy into positive action.
And until we are taught how to do that and that there is a way to channel it into positive action,
exactly.
You know, we're kind of like, we're very young, and we're crying out to find the ways to how
right.
to do that. And that's why I had you on today, because I felt like you could give us a little bit of insight from living.
This is not something that you can learn in one workshop or one class.
Right.
And feel that you know everything about it. This is a lifelong thing. I have to still work on myself and how to deal with my anger, in spite of the fact that I'm 75 today. And I've been practicing what grandfather taught me for the last 60 plus years.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's something that you have to keep on working at all your life, and gradually you become better and better at doing it.
Well, happy birthday. I had no idea.
Thank you very much. It's coming up on
birthday.
14th April.
Okay, the 14th of April. Because, you know, someone like you, Arun, can give us a little bit of insight that can open our minds and help us decide to seek those paths of nonviolence that we might not ordinarily seek.
Mm.
And I feel like it is such an honor to have you on our show. Christina, did you have any other insights that you would like to ask?
Well, I think probably one more question, and
sure.
I was thinking about what you talked about earlier with in terms of peace and about really having to create peace within us to create peace outside of us. And, you know, I was just wondering that if you ever close your eyes and if you imagine what peace on earth is like, what do you see and what does it feel like? Do you have any images of it, or do you feel it's just something that can't really be put into words?
No, I think it can be put into words. I think it would be a very tangible kind of, you know, situation. What I would envision is where there would be greater cooperation between nations, between people, that we would all be willing to work for those who are less fortunate than us, that we would be able to compassionately help other nations gain a better standard of living, even if it makes, you know, us having to sacrifice some of our luxuries that we enjoy here. And, you know, a world in which everybody is more loving and more compassionate and more respectful for each other and so on. And you know, especially a world where that our path to God is lined by good deeds and not by death wishes. Today, you know, we practice religion, and in the name of religion, we want to kill and destroy each other. And I don't think any God on earth or any God in heaven or wherever God is talks about killing and death and destruction and disrespect of anybody. I think God is all about love and compassion and understanding. And we need to understand God in the right perspective. And in spite of the fact, you know, like my grandfather said, that religion is like climbing a mountain. We are all going up to the same peak, so why should it matter to anybody which side of the mountain we choose to climb up from? So whether we are a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian or a Buddhist, these are just different ways of getting to the same peak. And we should respect that and understand that and love that. And I think if we have that kind of perspective, we would then envision a world where strife would not be so dominant as it is today, where love would be more dominant and respect would be more dominant and compassion would be more visible. And when I talk about compassion, I don't mean the kind of compassion that we show today. You know, we do churches run soup kitchens and people give charities and all that. But to me, these are all not constructive things. These are just ways in which we make the oppressed people more oppressed. We make them feel dependent on society. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is to make them rebuild their self-respect and self-confidence so that they can stand on their own feet and achieve things for themselves. And that is what constructive work really means.
Right. So that, like, the soup kitchens are more or less just Band-Aids.
Yeah, Band-Aids. And they go on year after year, and you go on feeding people, and you don't resolve the problem. You know, why? We don't ever ask ourselves, why are these people hungry all the time? Why can't they get food for themselves and do things for themselves? And, you know, it's the attitude that we are doing our good deed for the day and we are buying our way to heaven. And we don't care what the consequences of that action is. That is the wrong attitude. That is what we are doing is out of pity. And really what we need to be doing is to work out of compassion. And the difference there is that if we work out of compassion, then we would stop to think, why are these people incapable of doing things for themselves?
Yes.
Why do they have to depend on us? And what kinds of strengths do they have that we can help them realize them and be able to stand on their feet and achieve things for themselves? And then we make that little sacrifice to help rebuild their self-respect and self-confidence. And that is much more fulfilling than just writing out a check and giving somebody a few dollars and say, here, this is our good deed for the day. You go and do whatever you want to with this money.
Absolutely. Asking why they are not able to do for themselves. Why are they there in the first place? Why do we have to have a soup kitchen? Instead, asking what can we do that would make it impossible for them to need to come to a soup kitchen.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
That's a great way to look at it. And I have never really thought of it that way, because where I live, they have a lot of soup kitchens and all these people that are standing in line. And it cannot be very good for the spirit to have to stand in line just to eat, you know.
It is demeaning. Dehumanizing, demeaning.
That's right. And I think that, you know, people don't realize, and they think they're doing really great things, and you know, they're trying to do what they know, but until we show them a different way, that when no person on this earth is in need of food, shelter, or clothing.
Right.
Yeah. But until we get there, we have to kind of to be very patient. And, you know, Arun, you've been very, very patient and wonderful with us, and I do appreciate you being on our show. We're trying to learn and share as we learn with all the people on the earth. And Blog Talk Radio reaches many, many people all over the earth, and hopefully a lot of youth that may not even have a computer, but they can listen over their cell phone. And I really appreciate your being here today.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. And I, you know, my grandfather used to say that peacemakers should be like farmers who go out into the farm and plant seeds and hope and pray that they will germinate and we will get a good crop. So I, as a peacemaker, I go about planting seeds in the minds of people. And I hope eventually those seeds will germinate and very soon we could have a whole world of peacemakers where we can all work together to transform this world and make it a better place for future generations.
Oh,
yes, indeed. Yeah. And I think that world is coming, and I think it's, I think those seeds are being planted now, and with the seeds that your grandfather created and many others before him as well, I think now more than probably ever, even though there's a lot of darkness that we see, there's light that's growing and being created that is beautiful. And I believe that, I always believe that there will be peace in our lifetime. And it's thank you for all the wisdom that you share and your humility and your willingness to share what you have learned on your journey and your putting yourself out there to speak your truth. It's something that I admire very much, and I'm very grateful to have this opportunity to speak with you and to cross your path.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you, Aaron. And we're going to end the show with John Lennon. Imagine. Thank you, Christina and Aaron, and Sherry. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
Thank you. Have a great night, everyone.
Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
I thought it would be Imagine, but maybe not. So we'll just have to remember what Imagine was like and will be. Thank you so much, Christina. And Aaron Gandhi, Imagine, Sean Lennon.